Come be a part of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics with your host, Dr. Ed Holliday. Hear the voices of liberty speaking all across America. Doc Holliday provides thought-provoking interviews and commentary about the issues and actions that are afflicting this country and what we need to do to get America back on track. Get fired up. Get inspired. Get on board with Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right now.
Hey, Patriots, welcome back. You've got Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. I'm your host, Ed Holliday. You're listening to us on webtalkradio.net. That's webtalkradio.net. We just finished the Illinois primary. Mitt Romney had a big win. We're going to talk about where this race is headed coming up shortly. I got to tell you about today's show, though. We have Bill Federer coming on to talk to us about the history of Islam, what it means for the United States, and where we are today, what's going on in Afghanistan and Iraq, and how it's important to see what the big picture is. So you think about that. We need to look at the big picture. The little picture is who's going to be the nominee of the Republican Party. You will be shocked when you hear Bill Federer and what he has to say coming up in a few minutes. What a great interview. You don't want to miss it. Tell your friends and neighbors to listen to this interview. Maybe the most important interview they've heard this year. Now, I got to tell you that with the rock-splitting Obama fact and this week's Doc Holliday's Tombstone Award, there is like a doubleheader. It's about the same subject. We're not celebrating, but we're admitting that second year since the health care bill passed, it was just muscled through Congress under all kind of lies, manipulations, and half-truths. So we will be talking about that in the rock-splitting Obama fact at the end and in the Tombstone of the Week Award. Get ready for a show. I got one thing that I want to tell to Newt and Rick Santorum and also our good friend Congressman Ron Paul. This is the one thing I'd like to let you know how I feel about you continuing your campaign.
If you come down to the river, that you're gonna find some people who live. You don't have to worry if you got no money. The people on the river are happy to give. They will keep on turning.
Rolling on the river. That's why I want to tell. That's exactly what I wanted to say to Newt, Rick, and Ron. You think that Mitt Romney has it sold up? Not so fast. Keep rolling on that river, because every vote you get, every delegate you get, may just keep Mitt from wrapping this thing up before the convention. And anything can happen. I believe this election is so important. We have to keep all our options open. And that's another reason why you need to listen to the interview of Bill Federer coming up. You remember, he is the author of What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran and a History of Islam and the United States. So that's coming up. Very important interview. Before we get to that, let me tell you about the news from the Illinois primary. It was a big win for Mitt Romney, and everybody said it's sold up now. Let's get rid of this, all these speculations about a broker convention. Let's just go straight on and get this primary over with, and let's award Mitt Romney what he deserves. So that's what the general consensus is. But you just heard me. I'm telling the Newt, to Rick, to Ron Paul, go out there and get every delegate you can. It's not over. The fat lady has not sung. And the reason why is because if we get to a broker convention, I'm not upset that we can't be out raising money. I want the best candidate that we know of to go up against Barack Obama, because this is the most important election of our lifetimes. The fork in the road could not be any wider about where President Obama wants to take this country and where the Republican nominee should be taking this country. It is a huge, huge difference. We can look at the little picture. That's who is president of the United States. The big picture is the future of freedom in America. And that's why you're listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. Hey, we made it. I made it on the front page of the Wall Street Journal in an article about the Mississippi and Alabama primaries a couple weeks ago. Hey, not only Wall Street Journal, other people picked up that article. The Week and many other publications put out Ed Holliday as the dentist that's was trying to decide who to vote for in the Mississippi primary. But listen, this show is getting talked about everywhere from the front page of the Wall Street Journal to all the internet sites where you and your friends are on Facebook. I want to tell you, I appreciate you letting your friends know about this show, and I don't mind letting you know that I want to make sure you hear stories that the mainstream media is not going to let you know about. And when you can go back and listen to the archives, you will hear things here you won't hear anywhere else. And I guarantee you this interview coming up with Bill Fetter will knock your shoes off when he tells you some of the things that are going on right now under our noses and nobody's talking about. So you get ready for Bill Fetter in a few minutes. And where this Republican nomination goes, let me just say this. I don't fear a broker convention. If Mitt Romney does not get enough delegates, then we'll go into a period as he'll have the upper hand going into the convention. But the delegates that he needs, if he doesn't get enough to win it on the first ballot, there are some options open, and they could be long shot options. But I'm telling you, I am not ready to say it's over as far as Mitt Romney being a nominee. And one of the reasons why is I believe this whole Obama reelection team is setting up Mitt Romney. That's who they want, and that's why they have got their campaign ammunition ready to fly. I believe we're starting to see some of it even now. But let me go ahead and get to this week's Doc Holliday's Tombstone of the Week Award. Somebody's words. Who is it? Jim Carney, the press secretary for the White House. He came out and said, he said, I'm sorry, I get tickled believing he could say this with a straight face. He said, talking about the second anniversary of passing the health care bill, he said, nobody cares about it except for some pundits in Washington. Nobody in the rest of the country cares about the health care bill. That is the biggest joke. And to think that no other people in America care about the health care bill and it's going before the Supreme Court to be argued, and he said just a few people in Washington want to know about it. That is a complete lie. And it comes out of the mouth of the press secretary of the White House. And he gets this week's Tombstone of the Week Award for what he said. Absolutely ridiculous. It just ruins any credibility he thought he ever had. Now, folks, I got to tell you, I got an interview with Bill Fetter. I held it off last week. I was going to put it on, but we know the tragedy with the alleged murders by a U.S. Marine. And as that on goes, I didn't want that to take away anything from this interview. Before I play it, let me just say that I believe in the First Amendment right of freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and in no way do I want this to be anything that's demeaning to any individual and how he wants to worship. I don't care if it's a Jew, an atheist, or a Muslim, or a Christian, or Catholic, or a Protestant. But I do want everybody to know that it's very fundamental to freedom that our Constitution is not changed, that our Constitution is the supreme law. We do not allow Sharia law to come in and dictate to Americans how to live. And it's very important that Americans see what's going on with the big picture in the world. The little picture is this fight for who's going to be the Republican nominee. The big picture is, where does freedom stand? How will freedom in the future be? Will we have it in America? Are we losing freedom? That's why I wanted to talk to Bill Fetter. Here he is. He's the author of the book, What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam in the United States. He has some more books to talk about some of that, and where you can get those, you can go to American Minute and before I get Bill on the phone, let me just remind you, you're listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You're listening to us right here on webtalkradio.net. That's webtalkradio.net. And if you have not gone to my website, many of you have. I appreciate those who've ordered the book. It's still for $9.99, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. And you can go there right now. The website's www.teaparty.ms. That's teaparty.ms. Go there, order the book, get one for your liberal friends. Make sure they read a copy. It is important for this election year. Read it. Read about it. Go to the website. Now, let's call up Bill Federer. All right, we got on the air with us Bill Federer, author of What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran. We're glad to have you on the show. He also has the AmericanMinute.com. You can go to AmericanMinute.com and sign up and you get an email and a wonderful, wonderful service. You can find out some great history about the United States sent to you every day. So check that site out. And saying that, Bill Federer, welcome to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics.
Well, Doc Holliday, great to be with you.
Well, one of the reasons we wanted you on, because of your book about what every American needs to know about the Quran, was a very bold book, I think. Some people are afraid to write anything about Islam. And at the same time, Americans know very little when it really comes to the history of Islam. And now we have our president, President Obama, has apologized because of the Quran burning at the military base in Afghanistan. Some people look at that as a weakness, and some people say it's exactly what he should have done. So where do you stand? How do you feel about what President Obama has done in his apology?
Well, we have the Western mindset, and then there is the Arab mindset. And there's been 1,400 years of Arab Muslim military conquest, and they conquered Egypt, which had been Coptic Christian for six centuries, evangelized by Mark, that wrote the Gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And the Muslims under Amir ibn Alas conquered it. And then there used to be 250 Catholic dioceses along North Africa, and they were all wiped out in the 7th century by the Muslims. And then they invaded Spain, conquered it in 10 years, crossed the Pyrenees, conquered southern France. They were finally stopped outside of Paris by Charles Martel, the grandfather of Charlemagne. Then they conquered the Holy Land, and they conquered Syria, which was the first country to completely be Christian, evangelized by Paul, and Antioch, Syria, was the first city where Christians were called Christians. And within just 50 years of Muhammad's death, they conquered from the Persian Gulf to the Atlantic Ocean. It was the largest empire in the world, the Umayyad Muslim Empire. And so the Muslim world is used to warfare. And in their traditions, when an enemy shows weakness, it is an invitation for attack. You push harder. When a boxer is boxing somebody and the opponent lets down their guard, well, that's the signal for the first one to go in all the harder. It's very simple. And so when you show weakness, you are inviting attack. And I think it seems like the president has a goal of actually wanting to help usher in the Muslim Brotherhood into these countries. And the Muslim Brotherhood's goal is to have a one world government controlled by one Muslim caliph.
Wow, you said a lot right there. And so do you think President Obama's apology plays right into the hand of weakness? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, all of the President Obama, his advisors and the Muslims that he is putting into our CIA, Homeland Security, FBI, these are all Muslims that have connections with the Muslim Brotherhood, fundamental Muslims, and those that have an agenda. And so we see that after World War One, the Muslim Ottoman Empire was defeated, and France took a part of the old Ottoman Empire, Lebanon, and Syria. Britain took a part of the old Ottoman Empire, Palestine, and Iraq, and of course later gave birth to Israel out of that land. They wanted America to take a part of the old Ottoman Empire, Armenia. We said no, and the Muslims killed 1.5 million Armenians between 1915 and 1922. But after World War One, the Ottoman Empire was gone, and the Muslim world viewed itself as defeated. And the West was developing airplanes, telephones, and televisions. And so they wanted to curry favor with the West. And so they were ruled by these secular dictators, sort of like the Shah of Iran. He'd dress in business suits, get rid of the fezes and the burqas, and he'd teach English in his country and send his kids to Western schools.
Let's start one thing. You're talking about the Ottoman Empire. Where did Iran play in the Ottoman Empire? Was that a role?
Yeah, And they got their independence, and the British helped them to set up the Shah, who was a leader who was a friend of the West. And so the difficulty was that the Muslim Brotherhood was started in 1928 that said, stop trying to be friends with the West. We're supposed to take over the world for Allah. And then in 1938 is when the West discovered oil in Saudi Arabia, and we pumped billions of dollars into the most violent, backwards Muslim country, and they used that money to finance the spread of Islam. And so the violent, fundamental Muslims would pull the rug out from underneath of these secular dictators, and America let it happen. Jimmy Carter had a national security advisor named Zbigniew Brzezinski, and he said that the Soviet Union was our enemy, and if we let Iran fall to the fundamentalist Ayatollah, it'll be a thorn in the side of the Soviet Union. And guess what? He was right. The problem was, what we thought was going to be an isolated fighting on the other side of the world ended up metastasizing and spreading around the world. And so it's happened through different presidents, but the current president's actually helping it to happen. So he makes phone calls to Mubarak in Egypt saying, step down. We want to allow the Muslim Brotherhood to take over Egypt and take over these other countries. And so, again, the Muslim Brotherhood's goal is a one-world government controlled by one Muslim caliph.
Wow. Now, how many ties does President Obama have to the Muslim Brotherhood? You mentioned those in Homeland Security. Do you have any idea how many numbers of Muslims that have been placed in Homeland Security?
Well, there's Arif Alakhan. He was the deputy mayor of Los Angeles, and he stopped Los Angeles from tracking terrorists. He did such a good job, Obama chose him to be a member of Homeland Security. There's Kareem Shora, who's a devout Muslim from Damascus, and he's now a member of Homeland Security. Then there's Dalia Magahed, the first veiled Muslim woman as an advisor to the president. And there's evidence that she has connections with the Muslim Brotherhood. And then there's Charles Bolden, the head of NASA, that he says the president told him that he's supposed to forget going to the moon. He's supposed to reach out to the Muslim world. And then Hillary Clinton is spending $770 million through the Secretary of State's department to rebuild mosques in 27 countries.
You said $770
million? $770
million
through the U.S. aid and the U.S. Ambassador's Fund for Cultural Preservation.
Well, where is Barry Lynn and the people who want separation of church and state? Are they crying anything about that?
Well, I guess they don't believe in separation of mosque and state, so they're sort of duplicitous. But, we see that our foreign policy right now, I talked to someone, Mike Cutler, who used to work for the Immigration Department. He says that Saudi Arabia gets a rubber stamp, and they get tons of boxes of visas of Saudis that are brought to America without any checking into their background. And, you know, a large percentage of those suicide bombers on 9/11 were Saudi Muslims. And then Hugo Chavez in Mexico, in Venezuela, is bringing Muslim terrorists over from Iran to Venezuela, teaching them Spanish and sending them north. So they're coming across the Arizona desert. And now we have Hamas and Hezbollah chapters in lots of cities across America sort of following the drug gangs. And they've identified over 100 Muslim training camps in America, and now they're taking over the charter school system, and they're building these charter schools that are like fortresses, and they're bringing over teachers directly from Saudi Arabia and Turkey, these Muslim countries, HB1 visas, to teach them how to be little jihadists. And so this is all happening under our current president.
And are you for sure that there has been documented cases where Chavez has brought in the Iranians?
The largest Iranian embassy is in Venezuela. And there's regular flights that go back and forth. And because their complexion, they're able to come up through Latin America, and they're what they call OTMs, other than Mexicans. And so there are a large percentage of the illegal immigrants.
The OTMs, have we ever seen any come across the border? Is it documented cases, or are we just...
Yes, lots of them. And they found Arabic and Spanish dictionaries abandoned in the Arizona desert, prayer rugs, Korans abandoned in the Arizona desert. They are coming in, and our current federal government under the president is allowing it to happen. They are going to all kinds of cities across America, even getting special interest rates so that they can get loans and build. And so under the guise of religion, they're plotting to set up another political military system. And we don't have to scratch our heads. Again, there's 1,400 years of track record. and we can see how Egypt used to be Christian for six centuries. All of what is today Morocco, Tunisia, Algiers, those were all Christian areas. St. Augustine of Hippo was from Carthage, North Africa. Today that's Tunisia. And then, of course, Spain was conquered by the Muslims for 700 years.
So there was a, before the Crusades happened, there were Islamic Crusades, is what you're saying.
Yeah. They came up with the idea of religious military warfare and slavery. They enslaved 180 million Africans in the 1400 years of this Arab-Islamic warfare, and they'd castrate the men, make them eunuchs, and sell the women into their sex trade. And they had slavery again for eight centuries before America was even discovered. After the Spaniards discovered America and some of the native Indians on the islands died of Western European diseases, they decided to repopulate the Caribbean islands with Africans that they bought from the Muslim slave traders. So every slave brought to America was purchased at a Muslim slave market. They enslaved over a million Europeans. There were entire Catholic orders in Europe called the Trinitarians. The head of the order was called the Ransomer, and they would collect alms and donations across Europe and use the money to go to North Africa and try to get your friend back who was captured from a Greek island or an Italian coast or of a ship on the Mediterranean or from Spain or Portugal. Or one of the pilgrim ships was captured by the Muslims in 1625. Huh. They had sent it to England filled with 500 pounds of beaver skins, and the Muslims captured it, took it to Morocco, sold them into slavery.
Wow, and nobody hears, where do we hear about this history? Nobody's ever told me some of those things. So why don't Americans know their history better?
Oh, I think we're watching American Idol and vampires and, you know, Glee and American Idol, all these other things, and we forget that the rest of the world, especially from the Arab perspective, they view themselves as fulfilling this 1,400-year drive to conquer the world for Allah. What the communists called, it's called deconstruction, where you have to cut a people from their past before you can take them to the future. You have to, in China, they killed anybody that wore glasses, anybody that was a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, anybody with a college degree. They killed 80 million people in their Chinese Cultural Revolution.
And there was Mao Zedong.
Mao Zedong. And so they had this uneducated mass of young people that they brainwashed into the People's Republic of China. And so erasing the past is a necessary step to go to the future. And we see this happening in Europe, where Europe's gone from drive into neutral before it goes into reverse. In other words, Europe has gone from Judeo-Christian to secular before it becomes Islamic. Secularism is just a transition phase.
So you see the European civilization, you feel like they're about to go, they're coming under the powers of the Muslim.
Europe's very socialist, so the government pays for their health care, welfare, and retirement, but they're having fewer kids, plus abortion. They need workers to pay taxes to support all these retirees, so they let immigrants in. 70% of immigrants into Europe are Muslim, 50 million of them, and they're having, on the average, 8 kids per family. And now they're finding out the number one group in every Western European country signing up for welfare are Muslim immigrants. And these women will simply say, my husband is not with me, and the guy will have his wives, his harem, and the government will pay them food stamps and welfare, and the guy goes by and collects the money and impregnates them and then goes to the next one and to the next one and the next one. So he spends his day spreading Islam, and the West is paying him to do it. And now they're finding out in America that there is skyrocketing the number of Mohammed signing up for welfare, and our system of breakdown of the family, where it's normal now to have a single mother in an inner city that gets welfare, and a guy comes by every now and then, she gets pregnant again. This is facilitating Islam, where they're setting up their harems in America, and just simply the wives sign up for food stamps and say, the husband doesn't live with me. And that way he gets to come by to all of his different wives and collect the money and gets them pregnant. And we're paying for it here in America. It's a transition. We're going from our Judeo-Christian past into the secular present, and it looks like into a socialist / Islamic future.
So you're saying that's happening in America now. I'd heard it's happening in Europe on a larger scale, but I didn't know it's happening in America at this point. But you're saying it is happening already in America, as far as mothers signing up on welfare, saying my husband's not with me, and so how many number of wives can do that, and it just
and President Obama has opened up the visas for people coming in from Muslim countries, and so hundreds of thousands more are coming in.
Now, did he do that? He just, since he's gotten office, he's actually opened up the ability for more visas from Muslim countries.
Right, and Detroit, Michigan. There's a lot in Northwest Ohio, in Virginia, in the Washington D.C. area. I actually did a radio interview with a lady in Vero Beach, Florida, and her name was Lisa Chafin, and she was the actress in Father Knows Best, the old TV series.
Right.
She was the little Katie Anderson, the little girl in the series. She's grown now, single, lives in an apartment complex in Orlando, and she talked about how the Muslims began to move in, and she would try to be nice to the Muslim ladies, and more of them moved in. And finally, one day, a Muslim lady came to her door and said, I want to invite you to marry my husband. And she said, well, you're married to your husband. And she said, yes, but he's Muslim. He can have more than one wife. And she said, well, no, I'm Christian. I really don't want to do that. And she said, it's okay for him to have a Christian as one of his wives. And she said, no, really, I'm not interested. And then she said, a few months later, the guy comes to her door with a teacup and a saucer and wants to muscle his way in and have her serve him tea. And she said, I knew enough of Muslim culture from visiting with these Muslim ladies that if a woman fills the role of serving a man like a wife would, he could claim her as a wife. And so she said, you're not coming into my house. And then a few months later, she sees the same man with a young girl, and she's going by in the neighborhood, and she says, oh, is that your daughter? He goes, no, it's my new wife.
Oh.
This is happening in Orlando. This is happening in America. And the police are too afraid to do anything about it because they don't want to stir up the Muslims, and the sheriff doesn't want to stir up the Muslims, and the politicians don't want to stir up the Muslims, and they're all afraid of violence, and they're all afraid of lawsuits from CARE, and so they just let it happen.
Mm. And I mean, this is going on in welfare books also.
Right. I talked to somebody that works for the Department of Health and Human Services. He says that it's happening at a very increasing rate right here in America. So we're seeing a transition. It's being facilitated from the president's office on down. But we're too busy, you know, just keeping up with our distractions to really know what's going on. Anyway, I could go on and on, but it does fit into the president's reelection strategy, I believe, which is class warfare.
And,
it works. 45 countries fell through class warfare to communism. Put people out of work and then blame it on the wealthy, and then you stir them up to create riots and crisis, and so you get an excuse to establish martial law. It's an interesting strategy that's been used for hundreds of years. The president's campaign advisor, David Axelrod, made an interesting statement on NPR. He said, in Chicago politics, we have a tradition where you throw a brick through your own campaign office window and then call a press conference to accuse your opponent. In other words, you tank the economy on purpose and put people out of work.
You said a lot. Can you make us feel better? Can you say there's a brighter future for America?
It's in times of crises that leaders are raised up. And so if you want to have your life be worth something, this is the time to get in the game and realize that the good Lord likes to use little people who are small in their own eyes with faith and courage to stand up and do big things.
Well, hopefully we've enlightened some people out there to stand up and do something about this.
Yeah, I feel like if we get four more years of the current administration, the idea is to put out of business anybody that could challenge the president. And Lenin did this. When Lenin took power in Russia, the Soviet Union, he had to get rid of the middle class because they were the only ones with money to challenge him. And so he said, you grind the middle class out of existence between the two rocks of taxation and inflation.
Huh.
So you tax them so they don't have any more money, and the money they do save, you inflate the currency, so what they've saved up ends up being worthless. And then once you get rid of the middle class, you just have the rich planners, the communist party members ruled by a communist dictator. And then you have the mass of people who are equal, and they're peasants, and their fate is determined. And this is the topic I talk about in a book called Change to Chains. It's a little play on words, but It's a survey of 6,000 years of world history, and the typical form of government in all of world history is dictatorship. Well, if you're friends with the dictator, you're more equal. You're not friends with the dictator, you're less equal. And if you're an enemy of the dictator, you're dead. It's called treason. And that's the way the world was. It was ruled by kings, pharaohs, caesars, kaisers, sultans, and czars. Every now and then, there are some people that try to rule themselves without a king. Israel under the judges, the city of Athens with a democracy, a Roman Republic till Caesar made himself dictator for life. But all these attempts end up snapping back like a rubber band, and power reconcentrates in times of crises into the hands of a dictator. And so if you want to be the dictator, you want to create the crises. And then it's Machiavelli who said you create or capitalize on crisis to consolidate control. Same philosophy that Hegel and then Saul Alinsky taught, and Saul Alinsky was the one that Hillary Clinton did her master's thesis on, Saul Alinsky, right. And the president taught Saul Alinsky's classes when he was a community organizer in Chicago. So we have a president who is master at these tactics of creating or capitalizing on crisis to consolidate control.
Well, I don't know if that made me feel better or not, Bill, but it should make everybody feel determined that...
Well, my new favorite verse is Proverbs 13:22, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. Mm-hmm. So my feeling is if we can't stop it, at least we can slow it down. Mm-hmm. And if we can slow this agenda down, at least for another generation, and give our kids a chance, then that's what we're going to try to do.
Well, Bill Federer, thank you so much for helping to explain the Islamic history to America, and also letting us know that there's more than just what the mainstream media is telling us what's going on.
Well, thank you, Doc. And again, AmericanMinute.com is my website, and the books I talked about today are What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, and a DVD that goes with it called Islamic Conquest Past and Present, and then another book called Change to Chains, and that's the 6,000-year quest for global control. But it's on the website, AmericanMinute.com.
All right, and that was Bill Federer. How many nuggets did you get? How much of that did you know was going on? Did you know that the largest Iranian embassy was in Venezuela? Did you know that we have, because of Barack Obama and his administration, more immigrants coming in from the Muslim-dominated countries than ever before? Listen, this interview needs to be heard. Let your friends and neighbors know about this site, link it to them. I got to go back and listen to this again. I bet you will too. And may have to listen to it two or three times, let all this soak in. So I want to thank Bill Federer for coming on and for being bold to let Americans know what's going on. So check out his website at AmericanMinute.com and sign up. And get. He has some great history that comes out every day in an American Minute. Now, I got to get to this week's rock splitting Obama fact, and it is doing with the health care. There's some great numbers. You can go to the Republican National Committee and they'll tell you about the health care package. And the rock splitting Obama fact is that when Joe Wilson shouted out during one of the State of Union addresses, "You lie," he shouted out the truth, folks. He shouted out the truth. Read it and weep. Let me just give you some highlights from the broken promises of Obamacare. And these are so many rock-splitting Obama facts, I can't tell you all of them. But one of the promises, it says, Obama promised Americans that you can keep your plan. Didn't happen. Can't keep your plan. Obama said his health care package would cost $900 billion over 10 years. Guess what? Congressional Budget Office, Obamacare to cost $1.76 trillion by 2022, 10 years from now. Absolutely baloney. Absolutely balderdash. And to think that so many Democrats still got reelected. Every one of them that voted for this thing should be knocked out of office in the Senate and the House next election. This is abysmal. This is pathetic that politicians would stand up and pass something. And the cost estimates are so bad overrun. And we haven't even gotten to the very stages where the taxes have been going up and the whole economy be shot. And go back to what Bill Federer said. What does a tyrant try to do? What did Lenin do? You crush the middle class. You get rid of jobs. You destroy the economy. And then those who have some money, what do? You grind out the middle class by inflation and getting rid of jobs. And folks, this Obamacare is nothing but a time bomb ready to rip a huge hole out of the American soul. The engine of economics in America is freedom, and Obamacare is going to rip a hole. And I don't know if we'll survive it. I don't know. And some more broken promises. Let me go over some of those real quick, and then we'll finish up the show. But listen, as a candidate in 2008, Obama promised that his health care plan would lower family premiums by $2,500. He said, quote, "We will bring down premiums by $2,500 for the typical family." It's a broken promise. The cost of family health care premiums have increased from $13,375 a year to $15,000. They've gone up, and it's going up and up. How many more I could tell you? Just check out, go to the Republican National Committee. You can check out their website, and they'll tell you all the broken promises from Obamacare. The list is still growing every day. Absolutely pathetic. The rock-splitting Obama fact is that when Joe Wilson told President Obama during the State of Union address, "You lie," Joe Wilson was telling the truth. The media and the Democrats should apologize to Joe Wilson, the congressman from South Carolina. And that's this week's Rock Splitting Obama Fact. You come in and listen to us again next week. Great show coming up. We'll be talking more about the presidential race and the nomination for the Republican Party's nominee. There's some more things I got to tell you about that. And also, we're going to have the Rock Splitting Obama Fact and the Doc Holliday's Tombstone of the Week Award, which is going to keep knocking down what's going on. We're going to tell the truth, and we're going to tell you things here on Doc Holliday's Tea Party. You won't hear anywhere else. Tell your friends and neighbors. We're growing because of you. We're having an influence on this election, and we're going to let freedom ring. Here we're going to ring the Liberty Bell every week for you and your family, for my children, your children, your grandchildren, for every American patriot that loves freedom and wants to see freedom grow in a robust way and not be squeezed and not be diminished and not be put down by a president who is doing everything in his power, it looks like, to transform America from what it was to something that is where freedom is lost. God forbid it. Let's get out and work. Let's remember the most important three words of this year: get Obama out.
Thanks for joining us today. And remember to listen again next week for another edition of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You can order Ed's new book, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, Tea Party versus the Status Quo, by clicking on the book cover right in front of you on the screen. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.